She did not know of my sudden decision, made on the spur of the moment on a cold, wet day in London. I knew the hotel at which she was supposedly holidaying in Cairo and, after being delayed at the airport in London for a couple of days, I finally arrived at first light on a hot Egyptian morning, with fingers crossed that Carol was still there. My heart sank when the desk clerk said there was nobody with her name at the hotel. It began to look as if I had made the trip in vain. However, something made me glance down at the reception desk, where a pile of passports was waiting to be inspected by the police. Egypt was at war with Israel at the time, and all tourists had to surrender their passports for police examination. Much to my surprise, there, sitting on top of the pile, was Carol's passport, with her name prominently displayed. Serendipity at its best. When I excitedly pointed this out to the clerk, he became embarrassed as he was pronouncing the W in her surname as a V. So with my heart pounding and a great sense of relief, I prepared to surprise Carol. She answered the phone in a dazed voice and asked where I was calling from, then nearly dropped the receiver when I told her I was downstairs in reception. Needless to say, it was a very emotional reunion, albeit at 6 a.m. Having connected again, we went on an amazing journey through an Egypt devoid of tourists because of the war with Israel. It was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to visit sites such as the Great Pyramid in Giza and the tombs of the pharaohs in the Valley of the Kings, which were almost deserted at the time. In the Cairo Museum, the mummies of several pharaohs were still on display just prior to being locked away from the public. As a lover of Egyptian history, I am very fortunate that my steps of destiny in reconnecting with Carol resulted in such wonderful experiences. However, it was not all sightseeing, and our romance blossomed as we adventured around this fascinating country. So much so that at the end of our time in Egypt, Carol agreed to come to Australia to live with me, and 4 years later we got married. To this day I believe that unseen powers were pulling the strings that day, as our destiny was to reunite and work through karma from past lives. The other interesting part of that story was that while I was making inquiries about visiting Greece before leaving Australia, the general manager of the tour company involved recognized me from TV and immediately offered me a free 7-day holiday in Greece with no strings attached. The offer came out of nowhere, as all I was doing was inquiring about a tour brochure of classical Greece, which my mother, knowing my interest in history, had given to me. On the other side of the world, Carol, who was a tour manager for the same travel company, had finished her contract for the year, but was persuaded to come back and conduct one more tour on classical Greece. Our team in spirit was very active in making sure we connected. In retrospect, there were so many pieces of the puzzle that had to come together that it was definitely a vital destiny point specifically created for both of us. People in the spirit world observe, interact, and analyze life stories like this as part of their own ongoing soul growth, so this tapestry thread extends beyond the earth plane. An important part of their soul group work allows people to go back over their last life to examine in detail the whys and the hows, once again bringing the tapestry links into focus. John spoke about the regrets he had when he saw in his life review how his last lifetime was meant to play out, but was diverted by the choices he made. I was put on earth in a position of power, but I became self-absorbed. I didn't use that position where I could have influenced a lot of people. He explained that he was given his abilities as a writer and journalist to teach and to help, but ego got in the way, and that was his downfall. John is able to look back now and see how this affected his family relationships, how not having the courage to face his fears influenced his whole life. He now realizes that everything placed in his path was a part of his life contract that he was supposed to deal with and overcome. John describes his early passing as the opportunity to still continue his unfulfilled life's work in spirit by working with me. Another thread in the tapestry. The problems and situations we face in our lifetime do not simply disappear if we are unable to resolve them, so John knows that he is fortunate to be given another opportunity to complete his destiny. It is not like leaving work at the end of the day, realizing you have made a mistake. You know it is too late to do anything now, So you'll sort it out tomorrow. Major unresolved situations are often carried over into the next life. After we have carefully analyzed them in our between life group sessions, we may have to learn how to handle them in a different way, but deal with them we must. My romantic sojourn in Egypt turned out to be part of an ongoing saga from the dim, dark past. Once Carol and I had worked through our karma, the relationship began to sour and fade, and we eventually went our own ways. 5 years later, I consulted a visiting Indian mystic, who was adept at accessing the Akashic records in the afterlife. These records hold all the details of every life we have ever lived and are stored in the Hall of Records in the afterlife. See Afterlife, Chapter 23, and Chapter 38 of this book. Although the mystic had never met either of us, he described Carol perfectly and told me that I had been instrumental in her accidental death in a previous life in Egypt, but the karma was now balanced. The meeting shed some light on the agonizing repercussions of what had become a toxic relationship, and I believe the mystic appeared in my life to explain why Carol and I had to connect again in this lifetime. By this time I was with Judy, and the mystic told us both that we were part of the same soul family and it was our destiny to meet again at that stage of our lives. Our previous times together had mostly been fairly short, but were always intense and meaningful. We did not have any outstanding karmic issues to resolve, but had simply chosen to savor more time together again after sharing many past lives. Complex situations may be thrown at us that were not part of our life plan, because not every single event that crops up in our life can be scheduled in spirit. These unexpected events are part of the tapestry of life and we often refer to them as the 6 degrees of separation, meaning that everybody on Earth can be connected through 6 introductions. Lately, though, I am finding many of my contacts closer to 2 degrees of separation. Studies in areas such as astrology and numerology tell us that certain personal characteristics and major challenges may be part of the blueprint of life. I believe that these built-in abilities and challenges are part of the karmic contract that we agree to in spirit before entering each new body. A birth chart outlines the strengths and challenges each person has agreed to work within that life, so there is a set of guidelines available to us here on Earth if we choose to access them. 7. The dangers of negativity. We know all too well the effects negativity can have in every aspect of our lives. People who are always negative can be very hard to live with, and recent statistics showing the growth rate of depression in our society are very disturbing. It seems that all too often it is far easier to plunge into negative thinking and fear than to look for the silver lining in the dark clouds. This tendency to indulge in negativity is unfortunately compounded by certain elements of the media seemingly determined to fill news bulletins and current affairs programs with stories of violence, misfortune, and disasters. Good news stories are more often confined to the fluffy animal story at the end of the TV broadcast. A cynical observer may well think this is the spoonful of sugar needed to make the previous dose of medicine palatable. I had thought that negativity would have been eliminated as part of life in the spirit world, but John soon dispelled that impression. Even in the afterlife, the power of negativity is recognized as a force to be dealt with. The potency of group energy there is used to help bring about change and send positive messages to those on Earth. However, the power of destructive groups in spirit is acknowledged to have an even greater impact at times, because negativity is actually a stronger force. Even small groups projecting damaging energy can be more powerful than their larger, positive counterparts. This is because it is much easier to be negative, whereas it takes a lot more energy to be positive, strong, and loving. This once again reflects the continuing theme of as above, so below. Hatred and anger are such strong emotions that they can stay with people long after they cross over, and require an effort of will to release them. There are many levels or planes of existence in the world of spirit. Although all reports from the afterlife deny the existence of hell, spirits will cross over to their appropriate soul level. More on this in the next chapter. These spirits bring their unresolved negative emotions into the lower astral planes of the afterlife, where they must learn to recognize and shed them before being able to move to higher levels. To progress in the afterlife, we need to embrace love and positivity. If we find anger, hatred, jealousy, and similar feelings too difficult to release, then they are incorporated into the karma of our next incarnation. This explains why some people seem to be born with dark energy all around them. They may also attract these negative emotions in the next life in order to learn firsthand the lessons associated with them. John's group confirmed that there are indeed many beings from other worlds and other dimensions living among us on Earth, some of whom are far more negative than we are. They spread their darkness as they mingle with us, often unintentionally, not necessarily trying to disrupt our lives, as their DNA is basically incompatible with ours. Some of these beings from other solar systems go to the same world of spirit as us when they die, but John says there are none residing in his particular area. His knowledge of them is scant, as he does not have contact with them at this stage. At this point, John casually threw in an interesting tidbit of associated information about the way we reincarnate. Once we reach a certain level in the afterlife, we may be offered the opportunity to reincarnate on other worlds instead of returning to Earth. However, John has been told that his future lies in earthly lives, at least for the time being. Negativity is an addiction to the bleak shadow that lingers around every human form. You can transfigure negativity by turning it toward the light of your soul. 8. At home in the afterlife. As I drove up the steep road to Kelly and Kristen's hilltop property for another trance session with John's group, I stopped and looked out over the rolling green countryside to the distant ocean, lost in appreciation of what the locals call God's country. I wondered if even the beauty of the spirit world could surpass this magnificent landscape. Then I started to think about the location of the afterlife. We had established earlier that it is all around us, but I was determined to ask John for more information. Describing the location of the afterlife is not easy, even for those residing there. Essentially, John said, it is on another plane of existence, and because contact with those on Earth is difficult, this makes it feel distant to him. This difficulty is apparently going to eventually change and become easier as the vibration level of human consciousness rises and the two dimensions move closer together. The world of spirit vibrates at a much higher rate than does the Earth plane, even though both fundamentally occupy the same space, which explains our difficulty in seeing the spirit world. There are many levels or planes in the vast world of spirit. John explained his current level cannot be defined by a number, but for him it is rather more of a knowing where he is. He understands that he could even progress to another stage without realizing it consciously. This means that even though we are directly connecting with our soul family when we return to the afterlife, each spirit could be at various stages of soul evolution and inhabiting different planes. Perhaps it is similar to family and friends living in different suburbs and socioeconomic situations in a big city, or even in other parts of the country. Their lifestyles would reflect their experience and status in society. John believes the reason that there are no numbers delineating each level is because they would only create competition, which goes against the concept of life in the spirit world. However, John was a little vague when it came time to discuss the location of the advanced beings who are his teachers. My impression was that he simply realized and accepted that they were many levels above him, without knowing where and even how they actually lived, as this was not relevant to their great wisdom. Similarly, it is irrelevant to our relationship with, and none of our concern, to know where our university lecturer or boss lives. Professor Frederick Myers, who founded the first Society for Psychical Research in England in 1882, sent back concise information about the afterlife after he crossed over in 1901. Myers described the various planes in detail, which I have described in Afterlife. It would seem to me that John initially went to what Myers labeled the plane of illusion, to which the vast majority of us return in between lives. There are many sub-levels within this plane, so it makes sense that we can raise ourselves to higher levels as our soul develops, without necessarily being ushered through a gateway or given some graduation certificate with a golden key attached. My guide M informed me that our guides in the afterlife will quietly let us know when we advance ourselves, something we keep private. Boasting of our achievements is frowned upon, as the competitive streak that is so much a part of life on Earth is unnecessary in the afterlife. Advanced beings could come from the highest levels of the plane of illusion as well as from the other planes described by Myers, the next one being the world of idealized form. This is where the soul, no longer needing to reincarnate, explores avenues beyond the confines and illusions of the earth plane. John described these advanced beings as often appearing in human form when they visit the lower planes, usually projecting a male energy as far as he is able to gauge. However, this is a matter of personal recognition and depends on what kind of individual perception is required at that time. When he first returned to the afterlife, John needed to see spirits projecting an earthly appearance to support his own belief system. He wanted to see their lips moving and hear words coming from their mouths. This requirement soon diminished and he became content to just be in their presence. After a while he was able to understand their thoughts without seeing their lips moving or hearing their words. The next stage was to release the need for appearances and to simply be in energy with them. He revealed, though, that the deep need to see someone in human form has not entirely left him. When he first meets a new spirit, he is curious to see what he looks like in physical form, to put a face to the voice. John said this is completely unnecessary, but it is still a foible he has yet to release. Normally spirits appear to one another as a ball of light, or pure energy. John described the feeling of being surrounded by energy, and explained that all communication at this stage is done by thought. This also can be achieved from a distance, as spirits do not have to be in the same place together to have a conversation. The quality of this depends on many things, such as the individual level of advancement, how much you want to hang on to the image of the human body, and how long you have been back in the afterlife. This also helps to explain how people in the afterlife are able to communicate with those on Earth, mostly via mediums, although spirits can learn to lower their vibrations so that they can be seen. John said people cannot return to the afterlife and expect to have great conversations with other spirits from the moment they arrive. We start off simply, with basic communication skills, and then it takes patience and practice. It is much like learning another language, according to my guide M. This also can depend on how spiritually advanced we are on arrival and how many lifetimes we have had. At this point, John reiterated that one of the hardest habits to drop when we return to the world of spirit is that of referring and relating to time. In our sessions, he made frequent references to time, which he said were necessary for us to relate to his descriptions of events and situations in the afterlife. It can make communicating with us difficult when it comes to making plans, as spirits have to consciously put themselves back into earthly habits. It also explains why we are not always able to connect with those in the afterlife when it suits us, even though we may have set up a meeting with a medium beforehand. However, more often than not, people in the afterlife are only too pleased to take any opportunity to communicate with loved ones back on Earth. So when you next get guidance from someone in spirit, it is best not to ask too many questions about the timing surrounding the advice. M informs me that this particularly applies when we are asking for help from our guides. The timing of our actions is an earthly event, and is up to us to work out for ourselves. Apart from his own work and activities in the afterlife, one of John's favorite pastimes is looking over the welfare of family and loved ones on Earth, sending them guidance whenever possible. He sees them often struggling with everyday life and its stressful situations, realizing from his perspective that they are putting themselves through unnecessary worries and stress. Everything really does get resolved in the end, and worry does not help the process, but in fact hinders it. Fear often forces people to make wrong decisions, and those in spirit encourage us to concentrate on love instead so that we can surmount these fears. 9. Sport and the afterlife. One of my favorite memories from my career as a radio and TV presenter is co-hosting a sports program on TV for several years. I have always been a great sports lover, though my talents on the sporting field leave a lot to be desired. This interest gave me several years anchoring a weekly telecast that covered just about every sport in the book. I also got to host a Commonwealth Games TV coverage in New Zealand and was the studio anchor for an Olympic Games broadcast. Nowadays I am happy to follow sports such as cricket and all football codes as a spectator while each week waving a tennis racket around, pretending I'm playing tennis. Spirits in the afterlife are able to pursue any number of relaxation activities, from cultural to sporting. As everything in the world of spirit is created with the power of thought, it is very easy to go swimming, climb mountains, play tennis, go horseback riding, or create a round of golf on a stunning golf course that is literally out of this world. It is also possible, through thought and memory, to enjoy the experience of an actual event of the past, such as your favorite football final or even one of the great Olympic Games. But what about those people who were avid supporters of a sporting team while they were living their last life? We all know about the fans that week after week travel around, following their football, cricket, basketball, or baseball team. Some groups even take time off work to follow their national team when it tours to other countries. The legendary Barmy Army, which vociferously follows the English cricket team around the world, is made up of fans from various social and professional backgrounds. What happens to these often manic supporters when they return to the afterlife? Do they have to wistfully leave it all behind as a distant memory? Definitely not. According to John Dingwall, spirits are keen to follow their teams from the afterlife just as they did on Earth. Whatever sport you loved during your life on Earth remains with you in the afterlife for as long as you wish. Over the course of time this interest may fade, but it is obviously not considered a problem by the powers that be in spirit. John said he still has a yearning for the sport of rugby, which he enjoyed in his last life, and admitted he often popped back to Earth to watch a game. Sporting venues, it would appear, may have much bigger crowds than show up on official figures. The higher profile the sporting event, the more spirits are in attendance, John said. And they get in free. He went on to make a very interesting observation about the high level of excitement frequently achieved on Earth during great sporting events such as the Olympic Games or the FIFA World Cup. For many people, everything else in their life disappears as they completely focus on the action of the event, and he described it as almost like connecting with spirit. He also added that it can be something like rebirthing. So I'm looking forward to creating a subpar round on a magnificent celestial golf course when I return and will also, at last, have the perfect backhand in tennis. Such blissful afterlife dreams are made of this. 10. Judy's surprise. The sudden passing of my partner Judy in 1997 had an incredible effect on my life, at first devastating and then enlightening. Judy and I realized shortly after we met that we had a very deep soul contact, but after only 4 short years together she disappeared from my life. Or so I thought. With the help of medium Ruth Phillips, née Wilson, I was able to establish contact with Judy in the afterlife a few months after she passed, an event that not only opened up my medium abilities, but ultimately provided the inspiration for me to write my first book. In the years following her death, Judy kept giving me spiritual jabs to get moving and write. These messages were passed on from different sources in various parts of the world, including one from Canadian medium Robert Murray after he had appeared on radio out there. This further proves the many ways our loved ones are able to communicate with us in spirit. Ruth kindly agreed to also be part of this story, and her contact with Judy, detailed in chapter 55 of this book, has helped me complete a very important life transformation. However, Judy had earlier decided that she wanted to have a more direct contribution to this book, and took the opportunity to come through to me at one of my talks. On this occasion I was scheduled to speak in the morning session, and after lunch the presenter was visiting UK medium Val Hood, who had appeared on my radio program earlier that year while on a visit to Australia. Val has a wonderful reputation in Great Britain, where she has appeared as a medium in gatherings ranging from spiritual churches to large theatres, winning over audiences wherever she goes. Val has now moved to Australia, having fallen in love with this country, and will be a great asset to the community. Just prior to my talk, I got a very clear message from Spirit that Judy would speak to me later that day through Val. This was very surprising, because it felt as if I had lost contact with Judy in recent months, and I'd wondered if she had moved on to higher things once my book was published. My own talk went much like the many others I had given that year. Once I begin speaking about the afterlife, Spirit just takes over, my mind goes into overdrive, and the words pour out of my mouth, surprising even me at times. Sometimes it feels as if I am channeling the information. I keep remembering John Dingwall's words that the powers that be in the world of spirit are on a concerted drive to let as many people as possible know that there is no such thing as death. They are determined to remove as much fear as possible about our natural progression in life. Communicators all over the world are being inspired to spread the word, and I firmly believe Spirit takes every opportunity and method to help get its message across. Val is a highly experienced conscious medium who goes far beyond simply giving survival evidence. Many mediums can provide enough evidence to prove they are in contact with the spirit of the deceased, but are unable to receive further information. Val's bubbly personality breaks down any barriers that may exist with her audiences as she connects closely with the spirit energy that she brings through. The messages just flow through her mind, and she passes on the kind of specific information that people are often desperate to receive from loved ones in the spirit world. That afternoon the room was packed, but you could have heard the proverbial pin drop as Val described the first spirit that was communicating with her. I knew immediately it was Judy, and my heart missed a couple of beats. Val accurately described Judy's appearance and personality in her last life, despite having never met or even seen a picture of her. Nor had she read my book. Val went on to give me many different messages over the next 15 minutes or so, much to my delight. Judy finished by saying it was about time I started my next book. Up to that point I had been doing a lot of communicating with John Dingwall and the team but had not so much as written a title page. To cap off her very personal message, Judy told me word for word what John had said in a trance session a few months prior. My head began to spin, I could not believe what I was hearing. Val did not know anything about John and his team, let alone details of our contact sessions. This was the kind of synchronicity that proved to me beyond a doubt that it was indeed Judy speaking through Val. Not that I needed convincing, but I am human, and sometimes seeds of doubt can creep into my mind. The emotional impact of the contact with Judy really hit home, and afterward I had to leave the room to recover. Speaking with Val afterward, I discovered that she, too, was close to tears during Judy's very emotional contact. That was it. I left that afternoon, determined to start writing the next book. A week later I began listening to several recordings of recent trance sessions with John Dingwall, and suddenly I was off underway with this book. The story started to flow a lot easier than I had imagined. In going through the recordings again I found a reference that I had forgotten, in which John said he was in touch with Judy. She is part of the group supporting him as he channels, providing both energy and information as part of the collective. He also mentioned that when the time was right, Judy would come through personally. I guess she figured a prod from Spirit was necessary to get me moving again. Thanks, Jude, I obviously needed that. 11. Group discussions in the afterlife. As a child I used to imagine that people in heaven lazed around on clouds, strumming harps, surrounded by angels and cherubs fluttering by, and generally enjoying themselves with not a care in the world. I'm not sure whether that was the picture created in Sunday school lessons, or just part of my generation's Walt Disney image of the celestial world. I don't wish to be iconoclastic, but at the risk of repeating myself, nothing could be further from the truth. The concept of being toasted in the fiery pits of hell is also a myth, thank heavens, along with some bearded guy in a red suit, sporting horns and a tail and wielding a ghastly pitchfork. Once we have returned home to the world of spirit and our healing is completed, hopefully removing the imprint of our last life's malaises, we rejoin our soul groups and our spiritual development continues.